Station number 14129, Sydney East, Reel 6.
Mike got the DSO, he should have got the VC. He was a very, very brave man. And he was very badly wounded later on. But he did escape, strange as it may seem. He's still around to this day, finished up as a brigadier. That was one instance that I can well remember. Then, but the fourth day, it was really hotting up. And there was a breakthrough in the woods. And we had to stand our ground, which was rather frightening, but still we did it. And they didn't break through. I think we killed quite a few on that occasion. Later that afternoon, we had another stonking. And everybody by then was getting a bit tired and thirsty and hungry. And of course, food was running short then, and water had been cut off. So we had a problem with water. There was one well which the Germans had surrounded by snipers. So to go and get water was dangerous. The only time to do it would be at night. On the fifth day, the part at the other side of the road from me, the perimeter, I had a loudspeaker van, and the German, obviously speaking English, said, "Gentlemen of the Airborne Division, you are completely surrounded. Your Second Army will not be coming up here. You might as well surrender now. You fought well, you might as well surrender now and save any more casualties." And then I heard somebody shout in that famous old British tradition, "Bollocks," and then I heard an explosion of a grenade, and there were no more noises, so whatever happened, I draw my own conclusion. However, it did sober everybody up for a while until the news came through that we still had the way down to the river, and that was well held. So we were to hold that perimeter, whatever happened. On the sixth day, things were rough. We were getting sort of little sort of counterattacks on all points around the perimeter. And it was a bit nerve-shattering at times, very nerve-shattering. Particularly as we were, if you held it, you were then mortared. So you really hadn't got much of a chance either way. But we still stuck there. And the padre came round, sort of burying bodies. He was a wonderful man. He walked around, I've never seen anybody like it. As if God was on his side, and he obviously was. Because I saw him walk through. Mortars dropping, and they never touched him. He's a wonderful man at picking up bodies, burying them.
This was your padre.
Our padre. Padre Per. He was a wonderful man. In fact, his diary is still in the museum. He really did seem to have somebody looking after him. I think the seventh day, we managed to get, I don't know, where did we get some? We pulled in grass and leaves and things or something, and we made a bit of soup, anything to eat, because we were damned hungry. And somebody got some potatoes from the ground somewhere, anything to eat. We were getting rather ravenous. And we were still having these little inroads all the time. It was a bit nerve-shattering. In fact, very nerve-shattering at times. One day, it was about the seventh day, I think it was. Or was it the eighth? I had the last little tin of tea. You had a little compact can with the tea in it. And it had a little stove underneath, and it made a cup of tea. And I put it on top of my slit trench. I thought, well, at least I'll have a cup of tea today. And there was a sudden, bloody tin was knocked off. A sniper. I think it broke the straw with me. I thought, that's it. Where is the bastard? Really, my life. It's funny how things do like that. It just went to my mind. I thought, where is that bastard that did it? I leapt out of the slit trench. Another shot was fired. It missed me, but I saw where it came from in the trees. I rushed across into the trees, and I'd got a rifle by then, an ordinary rifle. And I could see this figure up in the trees, although he was covered with, he had a smock jacket on. And I let him have it straight as near as that is tree to here. And he screamed and dropped down the ground.
A few feet away?
Yeah, a few feet away. And it had gone right to, made a hell of a mess with me. A 303 bullet makes an awful mess. And I rushed over, I got a bayonet on there, and I was so pure, I got a bayonet at the bastard as well. I was so livid. Well, 7, 8 days of strain, you'll do anything. And I can remember this in my mind. And I went to him, and I looked, and there was a boy. Couldn't have been more than about 17. And I suddenly stopped, oh, Christ, what am I doing out here? And rushed back in and dropped into my slip trench. But I was shaking, like that. Shaking all over, I thought, I've killed a little boy. However, he'd have killed me, wouldn't he?
Yes.
Given the chance. But it all came back to me, and I dropped back in that slit trench, and I was shaking. I don't think I moved for the next few hours. Petrified. What have I done? That was a very sobering moment for me. That I can see it now, to this day, too, the same. Very, very sad. War. I can see that young lad's face. On the eighth day, everybody was a bit desperate by then. We thought, well, the green was in the front, the centre of it all. The hotel was here. We were there. The others were that side. And the green, that all round that side, the centre of the green was all the vehicles which had been plundered or whatever you like. And most of them were smashed up by mortars now. And the road came through the middle. I looked, and I was on the edge of the road here with the slit trench. Jack was in the next one to me. We looked up and we saw a truck coming through. We thought, who the hell's this idiot driving a truck at this time? Coming from the enemy. And as it passed, it was just a truck coming through. As it passed, we looked in the back and there were all the German soldiers sitting there in the back of this truck. They'd driven right through. Probably didn't know where the hell they were. And they were full of soldiers. So we started firing immediately after they'd gone. And just down, further down the road was I think of his name, with a six-pounder, or what was left of it, but it was still usable. He fired that, and that was the end of the truck. Went whoosh, straight up. But that was a very, very frightening. I thought, at first, I thought, Christ, it's Germans. I said to Jack, look, Germans, and we started firing. And the six-pounder got him just down the road. Well, obviously, they knew it was faulty if we were firing at it, I hope. Well, that's the only way that we had means of communication. And that last day, when everybody was literally hungry, tired, and knackered, absolutely, a message came over to me from Fletcher. I still see him now, Peter Fletcher. To be at the tennis courts at 8 o'clock, and anybody I could see around passed the message to them. Because the tennis courts, we got a load of German prisoners in there. We got about 200 Germans, prisoners, you see. I thought, well, that's funny. What the hell's this all about? So I went, I fought the stunk, went back to the headquarters to find Peter Fletcher. Went inside, and that was in the Hartenstein Hotel where all the bodies were. A lot of dead people wounded were taken in there. And I said to, I found Peter. What's this for tonight? He said, oh, we're pulling out. I said, well, where are all the prisoners? He said, don't ask. I don't know. So I never knew what happened to those prisoners. Anyhow, I went back, told the lads all that I could, were pulling out. We hadn't to make too much noise because we didn't want the Germans to know. And what happened was, at the corner of the tennis courts, Jim Walwork, they taped a route through the woods down to the river, and we were to go out down through there and across the river to get out, because the Second Army couldn't make it. Now, mind you, this is 9 days later. And I got all the chaps around me, and we started off, went to the corner, Jim was there, started off down the tape. It was then 8 o'clock dark, pouring with rain, thank goodness, and we'd asked for a fire down from the... we'd asked for covering fire from the Second Army guns. They could fire over the river, but they couldn't get over it. And that was a bit frightening, too, as long as they kept it well over our heads. And as we were going down to the river, There were two Oerlikons firing regular every second, and they were firing tracers. And that was where we could cross. That was the safe bit, the only part of the river we could get across, where the two tracers were firing. And as I got within, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 yards of the river, there was a queue, blokes trying to get out across on these dinghies, which were being driven by outboards. Well, the Germans must have heard those. Well, they did, because they started mortaring. And as I got about, say, 50 yards, I heard a voice saying, "Help, help, don't leave me here." I recognised that, that's Jimmy. So I crawled out of the trees to where this bit of spare space was. And I said, "Is that you, Jimmy?" He said, Jock, for Christ's sake, didn't leave me." He says, "He's a Scot, real Scot. Don't leave me." I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "I've been hit." Well, our orders were not to bring any wounded, leave them behind. Those are the instructions. Take no wounded. I said, "Oh, dear. Well, hang on, let's see." So I tried to move him, and he screamed. I thought, "Oh, Jesus, I can't move him." And, of course, as he screamed, the Germans were no further than that over the other side of the road. They were firing. Oh, bugger that. I said, "Hang on, Jim." I went back to my bloke. I said, "I want a couple of blokes to give me a hand. I've got a wounded fella here." And these were glider pilots. They said, "Yeah, okay." I said, "He's one of us." "Oh, okay." So we went back. So it was only a few yards. And I said, "Now, for Christ's sake, Jimmy, don't make a noise, please. We're going to move you." And there was another dead bloke alongside him. It was Eddie. And we lifted him. And I think he must have gone into a haze then, because he didn't scream anything. We got him down to the boat, and the bloke, the fellows in the queue, "Can't take wounded." I said, "Who's bloody well said we're taking him, see?" We put him on the boat, and these Canadians, they were wonderful guys who were pulling us across the river. "Yeah, we'll take your wounded buddy, see?" They got Jimmy across. "Who's with him?" I said, "Well, nobody really." "Well, you brought him, yeah? Okay, well, you better." I said, "Well, don't take anybody's place. I'll hang on the side." He said, "Okay." So the next bloke went, and I hang on the side. Was dragged across. See? It was pouring with rain. We were soaking wet. Didn't make any bloody difference. Got the other side. They helped me off with Jimmy. And I put him on the ground. And he sort of came to then in water. Water. And out of nowhere, a Dutchman came with a tin hat on. "You have friends wounded." I said, "Yeah, I take him." I said, no. I'm looking after him. "I will take him. You go." I said, "Well, don't leave him here." "Right, we take him up." So we carried him up a bit, dragged him up the bank a bit. And he said, "Now, Ivy, look after him. You go." I said, "He wants some water." "Moment, I get some." He went away and he came back with tea. Christ knows where he got it from. He gave Jimmy this tea and then Jimmy passed out. And the Dutchman said, "Right, you go that way now. You go there. They're your friend." So I went to where I thought my friends were. And again, once you got up the bank, there were woods. Somebody stepped out and said, "Halt, who goes there?" I said, "A friend, for Christ's sake, from the other side." "Oh, okay, well, you're going the wrong way." I said, "Oh, thank you very much." He directed me the right way. And we got a cup of tea and we put on coaches on the transport. And even that was shelled as we were going down the bloody road. Then we went to Nijmegen. That's right. Nijmegen, that's right. And when we got to Nijmegen, we were put in a barracks. And we hadn't been in the barracks 5 minutes before a shell hit it. That was at Nijmegen. So we all pulled out of the barracks again. We thought, "God, bloody hell, how far have we got to get out of this damn thing?" And we went to... They said, "Oh, well, we'll drive you through the night." Because the road, you see, was a very narrow road. And we were driven down to Louvain. And there, I must say, we were hours in those trucks. I can't remember how long. The Belgian people were wonderful. As we were sort of hanging around, waiting to go into some barracks or something, "Please come to my home." I went to somebody's home with two others. We had a bath, and they fed us, and we had baths and everything, and slept in their bed. It was wonderful.
Had they known that you'd come from Arnhem?
Oh, they must have done, I think, yeah. I don't know who they were. I wish I did. That time you don't think, do you? I was only too bloody glad to be alive. I don't know who they were. They were very kind, anyway. Belgian people, very kind. And that was the... Well, we eventually were flown back the next day to American base in Dakotas. And then we were flown from there to back to Kievel. And when I got back to Kievel, it was like a graveyard. There was one, two, three, four of us left out of our flight. Sandy had been shot, Wilkie had been shot, Cosmo had been shot, Dad Tannen was wounded, Harry was missing, he'd disappeared, blown to bits, I think. Eric had gone, he'd had his legs blown off. Dougie McLean was dead, and I think one of them was wounded and probably a prisoner. That was our flight. It was the left of them. I tell you, it was very frightening. Very, very frightening. I can remember we said there was a party for us in the mess. They'd arranged a big party. Nobody wanted to go to it. We went over, we had a couple of drinks, but nobody felt... we didn't feel like living it up because we'd lost all our mates. We were all right the next day, but I didn't sleep for weeks after that properly.
Weeks because ago. You were reliving the events?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But we weren't cancelled.
We got a leave. We went 14 days leave. And I remember my mother saying, "Oops!" I used to wake up screaming at night.
Were you all right after the war? Or?
Oh, yes. About a month afterwards, I was okay. I went flying and was all right.